Hello, I am John Cavendish, and welcome to the Amazon Strategist Show, the show that's no hacks, no silver bullets, no magic pills, just serious strategy for serious Amazon sellers. My guest today needs no introduction. He is the big man in the Amazon space. Some say that Jeff Bezos may have stolen his look. We can ask him that today. So, Brian Johnson has solved for product visibility, engagement, and conversion, and he has served over 20,000 business owners to deliver over $1 billion, he says maybe $2 billion, of sales through the Amazon platform and e-commerce in general, so we can dive into that as well. He is co-founder of Canopy, along with Mr. Brian Burt, a brand management agency which has just entered the Inc. 500, which I think is incredible, so I really want to dive into that with him, because that's, next level, in my opinion. And Canopy achieves amazing results for the brands that they work with. I know they're working with some of the biggest players in the industry and biggest players in the D2C market as well. So welcome, Brian Johnson.
Well, thanks for having me. That was quite the introduction. Appreciate that.
Well, we actually did another introduction for you, which Viv, our producer, has been doing some internet sleuthing. Uh-huh. And I was going to make the joke, I've been planning it for a while, about Jeff stealing your look. Uh-huh. And then she went a bit deeper. So Viv, if you want to throw up the picture that we found of potentially Brian's parents. Here we go. Oh no, bated breath. Why is it taking so long to load? No, that is definitely not the right one, Viv. There we go. Mr. Canopy Management. I don't know if The Rock is that much bigger than Jeff, but
Dwayne Johnson, yes, dude. Exactly. Yeah, that's old Uncle Dwayne.
Thanks, Viv. I wanted to start it off with a bang. So first, congratulations, Brian, on your Inc. 500.
Yeah, it's cool. Last year we were in the Inc. 5000, and this year we made it to the Inc. 500. It'd be kind of cool to make it to the Inc. 50. But we'll see. <Yeah.
laughs> So what are the metrics for the Inc. 500?
Honestly, I can't really speak to what they are. Usually it has to do with just speed of growth over the last 12 months. We tend to I think we've got a pace. We've been around for about 4.5 years, and we tend to double. Sometimes we triple, but usually double year over year. And so I know last year we were the fastest growing advertising agency in the country. And this year, it was, we made it down to, it was Inc. 500. We were ranked in Inc. 500 as far as, fast growth. Usually it's based off of either a combination of revenue or employee growth. Yeah. But I think it's mostly tied to revenue.
Yeah, no, I agree. I will look that up and we'll shove it on for the recording so that we have some amazing data for that.
Right on.
So I feel like, everyone's asked you every question about Amazon PPC. And if anyone really, really wants to learn about PPC, they should check out your videos and attend one of your webinars, because I know Canopy does a phenomenal job. I know as we work with Canopy as well. So really, in terms of marketing, I see your off Amazon marketing, like what you do for yourself and what you do for Canopy, as one of the coolest strategic things you do. So how did you get into that and how do you do that?
Well, I mean, kind of some background on this. So, I've been in the e-commerce space for 14 and a half years now. Started out on the Amazon side as well as my own site, call it equivalent to Shopify, but it was pre-Shopify. And then I've been in Amazon space for about 7.5 years. So when I had first came into the Amazon space, I had launched my own product, but then I had also started doing some coaching or consulting for a friend of mine who already had an established brand on Amazon. His girlfriend at the time, now his wife, had over 800 SKUs in the beauty category on Amazon. And they said, hey, what can you do to help? I'm like, okay, I got this, I've got a week of experience, or a year, I think it was more like 6 months to a year. And I thought I knew a lot more than I did, of course. But I went in and started researching, and one of the ways that I was trying to figure out, okay, how do I scale this, was advertising. Cool. Let me go find out, who's teaching advertising. Where can I learn? crickets. Even Amazon didn't have anything out back then. Okay, is there any software? No. No software, no training, nobody even talking about it. I'm like, all right, well, let me throw up a Facebook group and just see if I can get a few people to chat about it. Maybe we can just mastermind, you know, get 15, 20 people. That group grew a lot faster than I expected. It's now over 22,000 members in that group. But it became one of those things where not only was I using it for myself, where I had to go out and I had to learn. I had the full learning curve of having to learn everything I could about Amazon advertising. And once I started doing that, I essentially geeked out on it, started specializing on the advertising as opposed to everything related to selling products on Amazon. So for a while, a couple of years, I let my own personal products get, you know, I tucked those away and then didn't do anything with those while I was learning advertising and practicing advertising. Fast forward, I had rolled out the first Amazon advertising software, and I had this community, and I said, okay, let me go ahead and just do some one-on-one coaching. $35 an hour. So Brian Burt rings me up. He says, yeah, I'll take one of those. You know, tell me what, you know, what's going on with mine. And of course I just, you know, pretty much just threw up information on him. And he goes, yeah, you got way too much information in your head. You really need to get this, you know, we need to sell this. So, he said, he goes, why don't we go ahead and just develop a course? You know, could you put together a course? I said, yeah, of course I could. No clue what it would take in order to actually take what was in my head and get it into paper, get it back into video, get it into a training structure. And no lie, it caused me a lot of pain and lost sleep trying to get that first edition of Sponsored Products Academy out there. I launched. We did really well with it, but wow, that was a learning curve. And that was the start of Brian Burt and I having a partnership with Sponsored Products Academy. Fast forward a little bit longer, you know, a lot of that had to do with like, okay, the way that you let people know that course is out there is you got to get out there and you got to do, you know, get on the podcast circuit and you got to go live and you got to do Q&A. And I was already very interactive with my own group on Facebook, but we're expanding that out. And I couldn't create a video on my own, you know, speak a sentence to save my life. You know, I just was not camera ready at all. And he coached me for years. I do have to give quite a bit of credit to Brian, is that he definitely coached me again and again, much to my, again, to my own pain, you know, a lot of discomfort, but I had to grow through that, which is something that anybody who's sold on e-commerce, you know, if you've had an easy ride, then you're in for a rude awakening when it hits. But, you know, most people, they've got, if they're going to succeed as an entrepreneur, they're going to fight through some growth pains, including personal growth. And I had to do that. And I had to do it multiple times across a few years to kind of get to the point where I am comfortable in front of the camera. I can speak freely on casts like this, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I could ramble on for hours, really, but I'll save you that. But at the same time, is that when I first started out, man, I was too much of an engineer, too much of a geek, and I would just put people to sleep with too much detail and everything. So now I don't tell them anything. No, I'm kidding. No, I've learned how to do a lot better as far as like kind of focusing the messaging and really trying to say like, no, this is the critical stuff that you need to know right now, as opposed to here's everything that I know that's in my head. You know, have it actually consumable as information.
I love that. And that's an awesome journey as well, isn't it? Like, I feel like people that come from the technical background and learn how to process and deliver information are the most effective people in life once they've learned that.
Yeah.
Because I came from a different direction and then had to learn the communication and the information. But people who can just dump it all, it's like that inflection point of like, oh yeah, I need to go. You know, have you read You can't teach a kid to ride a bike at a seminar. It's like about the Sandler sales system, his emotional selling system.
I have not seen
and
that
it
one.
And it talks about the dummy curve of being a salesperson. And like when you start out, you're a great salesperson because you're a dummy. And as you get more and more educated about what you're selling, you get worse and worse at selling it.
Yeah.
Because then you start knowing stuff and you start dumping information onto people and they feel inferior and they emotionally, they don't feel good about buying. And as you get to be a better and better salesperson, you turn into more of a dummy again.
But God, this time, I can definitely relate to that.
An intentional dummy.
Right.
But no, I totally agree as well on the going through discomfort part, you know, like the times where you think like, this is falling apart. That's the time when you're just before the breakthrough, just before the next time when things are going to get amazing again.
Yeah.
So what were some of those inflection points as well as the content? What are some other inflection points in your journey where you thought now it's going to be different going forward?
Oh, I always thought it was going to be different going forward. And I was always fooled because it wasn't, you know, it was like, okay. And I need to, you know, it's once you get to a comfort zone, you realize there's another level. There's a CEO coach that Brian and I learned from, Alex Charfin, who's also in Austin, Texas. And he teaches like CEOs to like put on their big boy pants essentially. Yeah. And he has a map. He calls it the billionaire code. And I've seen different variations of this, but essentially it is different stages of an entrepreneur or a business development in some of the organizational and personal challenges you've got to overcome before you can advance to the next stage. But the most critical lesson of this, in fact, it's so important that I actually blew it up into full poster size. And I've got one on my wall and then Brian Burt's got one himself. But the most important thing to learn about this is not simply just a benchmark where you're at and what some of the organizational challenges are and what are some things that you need to overcome in order to advance to the next stage, you know, so to go from, you know, a million to 3 million, 3 million to 10 million, 10 million to 30 million, you know, that kind of, you know, those kind of stages. And you could call those ceilings. But what the most important thing that you hear it, you learn it and you hear it and you say, it's like, okay, yeah, cool. I understand that. But you don't really understand it until you screw it up, really, because we would hit a ceiling, you know, one of these income levels. And then we sit there, you know, for 6 months, you know, for a year and go like, what is going on? It's like, you know, we keep on advancing and then falling back and then advance and then fall back. And it's like, how come we can't break through to the next level here? And we like, oh, let's go ahead and dust this thing off and, you know, look at our poster. And it's like, oh, the rule that we heard but didn't really take to heart until we experience it is you must complete every single one of these tasks, these prerequisites, in order to advance. Otherwise, you're going to fall back again each time. And we are always missing one or two of these organizational or personal things, personal growth points that we hadn't solved yet. And so we kept on getting pushed back. So once we, you know, and of course, then we break through. It's like, cool. You know, it's like, we did it, you know, and we grow and grow and grow. And then after a while, it's like, man, how come we're not growing? How come we're not going? We couldn't figure it out. It's like, let me go look at the poster again.
I want to picture that poster.
Yeah.
Can you share one after? Share one. We'll share it below this video.
You can Google it. Amazing. Actually, it's Alex Charfin and Billionaire Code. You can Google that. Sweet. I can send it to you too, but he is quite a smart mind here. A bit eccentric sometimes, but I suppose, but there really is some wisdom in there where sometimes you just have to acknowledge. Another thing that Alex actually taught us quite a bit was you really have to acknowledge and embrace what your strengths and weaknesses are. It's like, you know, Brian Johnson, it's like, you are not the operational, you know, you're not operations. You're not making sure that all the processes are developed. You are the subject matter expert. You have these skills. You're good with people in front of the camera, in front of the community, on stage, all that kind of stuff, right? Because you have all these things. And like you obviously pointed out, John, was there's times when I feel dumb enough that I can teach it and times where I feel smart enough where I can't sell it. And so recognizing a person's strengths and weaknesses, and that applies to every person, every position in an organization. You've got to figure out as quick as you can where, you know, it's like, look, that's just not something. It may be in the job description, but it's not part of who you are. And it causes you pain and it causes you resistance and it doesn't get done because you don't want to do it. Let's find somebody else in the organization that we can shift that to. We're going to intentionally modify the roles and responsibilities of position so that what you end up with, whatever role you're in, it's because you wake up in the morning and say, like, I can't wait to do all this stuff. If you don't feel like that, you're not in the right position, or you haven't created the position to fit you. You're simply trying to enforce yourself to fit into that position.
Yeah. And that is a golden nugget, whatever we're going to call them, you know, on this podcast. We still haven't got a name for it.
Spoonful of honey.
Spoonful of sugar. Spoonful of sugar. We need like an American Southern accent from Texas to say that.
There you go.
Sugar. Yeah. And I would 100% identify with that as well. Like, we've been hitting one of those ceilings. You know, we've got 70 people. We keep going up, coming down, going up, coming down, because some people aren't in the right seats because everyone's been playing past the hat game as we've been growing very, very quickly. And then also, we don't have some of those systems in place. You know, certain automation, certain lead gen things, certain things which I know are missing, and we've just been brute forcing through them up until this point.
Yeah.
And brute force is no longer the volume. We just need so many people to brute force those through those things. It just wouldn't be possible.
We are a human heavy organization, and you know, recruiting is, you know, a two-person full-time job, and it's gotten worse post-pandemic because it's gotten worse because I think more people are seeking online employment, and therefore we've got more competition. But frankly, in the e-commerce space, there's fewer people that have the right skill set and the right experience. There's a lot who claim they have it, but they really have the experience that stick.
Yeah, I totally agree. I saw this article on LinkedIn, which I'll share with you because I think it'd be a great thing for Canopy as well to share. And it's about Blink, that app Blink, that does all the little book summaries. And they say the company that's harder to get into than Harvard, because their acceptance rate from CV to acceptance is 4.5%. So I got our team to run the numbers, and ours is like 2.5%.
I was going to say, I'm like 4.5% seems pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'll share it to you. You guys can use it in your marketing as well.
Yeah, I would say, ours is probably about 4 to 5% too. Yeah. So I would say, I think on that, we probably, you know, we'll interview 20 to 25 just to find one that is the right fit. And sometimes, you know, we'll take somebody from that same pool 2 months later, you know, but we are essentially in the financial business. We deal with a lot of money for our clients. We can't be screwing around with people who just don't have the experience and are going to make mistakes. We have processes and oversights and, you know, special strategies and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately it comes down to the quality of the people that make our culture, that make our systems work, that helps support the performance level that we can achieve and the growth that we can do. Because ultimately we need to be able to, we're in a stage right now where we're promoting from within, so that, you know, according to the poster, right? we can advance up to the next stage. Because right now we keep on bouncing on this one ceiling.
So based on your poster, the god of posters.
Yeah.
If, you know, say you're the average viewer of our show, you're doing somewhere between 20 and 200,000 a month, and you want to start resourcing your business properly, because most people, well, in my experience, most people get there pretty quickly and then hit a ceiling.
Yeah.
As you say, they hit a ceiling, sure, possibly capital, but also then resourcing, because a lot of people, it's their first business. They, you know, I didn't know how to hire when I started out selling on Amazon. So through from your experience, like, what's the first hire that people should make, do you think?
For an executive, it's going to be an executive assistant, somebody who's going to take off some of the common tasks and just kind of, you know, manage the manager, you know, make sure schedules are in place and that kind of stuff. for an organization, most of the time it has to do somebody in like a sales or marketing role, not as much in operational, because usually they have to go out there and they have to find, you know, the next customer, the next target audience, they have to interact. You know, it does depend on the organization, of course. I will say that depending on, let me think here. I had something brilliant I was going to say, and of course now it's gone. So I'll make up something stupid. ultimately, when you're a young company, when you're a startup, there's a different mentality between a startup organization and an enterprise organization. Because the startup organization is everybody's wearing multiple hats. The CEO is doing 10 different jobs. You know, pretty much everybody who's, you know, been there since the start of the company is doing 10 different jobs, and they can do those jobs. But at a certain point, it becomes so time consuming in each area that they're starting to get overwhelmed. And they don't acknowledge it because, like, oh, I'm powerful, I'm strong, I'm smart, I can do all these things. After a while, no, you can't. As brilliant and as fast as you may be able to work, you really do have to separate what is a $20 an hour job versus what's a $1,000 an hour job. And ultimately, the people who founded the company should really be focusing in on those $1,000 an hour jobs first and foremost, almost exclusively, and they need to hire or outsource. The problem with hiring, of course, is then now you've got to recruit, you've got to train, you've got to make sure process is in place. And by far, the downfall of any company, including our own, we didn't, you know, fall all the way down, but the first year was rough because we didn't have all the processes in place in order to make everything run smoothly. We've got all that in place now and things work awesome, but it's very common for people to have head knowledge, not put it into a checklist process that they can then delegate off to somebody else and have the faith that, like, okay, I'm going to hand this off to some process to somebody else. They may screw it up and that's okay, because as long as it's not on me, I may have to replace that person. It may be a headache initially just trying to get somebody to be the right fit in that, but I need to get it off me so that I can spend these 10 hours a week or whatever it is, not doing the $20 an hour job, instead doing these $1,000 an hour job. And that is letting go of, like, I can do that in place of I should do this.
Could leave a pause so that everyone can, we can cut that out. And that is, like, number one takeaway from this podcast for anyone who's grown a business, you know, soundbite. But also, if Ben or Arvin or anyone on our leadership team is watching this, you know, we're all wearing too many hats. You know, we're still all wearing too many hats. We have the resources, we have the hiring team, we have everything to outsource it, but we all hold on to ownership because,
just, and that will hold you back as a company, as a department, 100%. As a person, as a department, as a division, once you get to that point, and then as a company, it will hold you back if you can't delegate to the next person and you're not promoting within and advancing people throughout. It's not about, like, hey, you know, congratulations. It's about making sure that the people with the most experience are working on the highest value per hour tasks, not still working on the stuff that they were hired to do as an intern.
Yeah, I get that. I've seen that. We've got people on our team doing stupid stuff.
Yep.
So I guess all of this mindset shift and this, you know, this knowledge that you've accumulated over the last time, you know, working with Alex Schaffern, is this from some of this left over from a corporate career in the past, or is this all stuff that you've really been downloading and getting into your head?
I went through the corporate grind. I spent 20 years in corporate America in Fortune 500 companies. You know, I worked for, you know, Intel and Avnet and Best Western and, I'm trying to remember now some of the other ones here, Costco Wholesale. And, you know, I've worked for a number of large organizations that had processes and time cards and, you know, disciplinary action statements, you know, all this kind of, you know, stuff. And I, when I finally switched over to become an entrepreneur, it was the hardest, most confusing thing to do, because it's what I wanted to do, but I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And as an entrepreneur, if you don't get the job done, you don't get paid. It's not like, okay, I suck this week, or I had a bad day at work. You still got paid if you're W-2. As an entrepreneur, you don't eat. You don't get paid. And so you either fail or you learn really fast. You got to get really fast at learning. Usually a good way to do that is to find people who are like-minded so that you can trade ideas and experiences. It's a great way to do that. And frankly, that's something that we do within our own organization. Is the individual teams are very collaborative, and so they get to trade. So the person who has the most experience is giving and learning information just as much as the brand new hire who started a week ago, because they're all in the same conversation. And so it brings up your average of that team just as well. So if you're independent, the biggest mistake that a person can do is to continue to do it alone. I'm a one-man band. Yeah, you're an unpopular one-man band. You know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, in finding a community, finding a network, finding a group of people. Just as we were sharing before we got on the call, and the reason I came out to Asia was to meet this group of location-dependent business owners who used to just hang out and chat and brainstorm and work from cafes in Asia, you know, back in 2015.
Well, and there's something to be said about too, is because when I first started out in internet marketing, I started out like, oh, I'm going to create my own meetup group, you know, just like the local community, you know, group on e-commerce, for instance, right?
Yeah.
And after a while, you know, you organize these things, and after a while, you find yourself, you know, you're leading a discussion, and people are asking you questions. The problem with that is if you're always the person that people look to for answers, you're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
Because you're getting all these accolades and pats on the back, and people are learning from you and think you're a hero and all that kind of stuff. Cool. That doesn't cash well. The banks don't consider that a currency. You have got to surround yourself where you feel out of your depth, because you've got so much more to learn, but you're surrounding yourself with people who are at the next stage, not 10 stages away, but at the next stage of where you want to be. And you're just, they're just, you got your mouth shut and you're just taking notes and you're just listening. You're learning.
Yeah. I mean, exactly like this conversation. other communities, like I joined an entrepreneurs organization a few years ago and been going to those events. And yeah, when somebody stands up next to you and goes, oh yeah, we launched a new product last year and we did 250 million in sales since September last year. And you're like, damn.
Yeah.
It was like,
yeah.
I was great when we hit 120K a month or 100 or 200K a month or whatever. And like this guy just did 250 million in 6 months.
Yeah. Well, Yeah. The ego wants those kind of like those moments, you know, to say like, yeah, you know, it's like, cool, I got recognized for doing something awesome, you know, Inc. 500, all that kind of stuff. High five. But the reality is that the very next conversation, you could be at some mastermind event or some conference breakout conversation. You're like, going, I haven't done a thing. I haven't done enough. You know, like I could be doing so much more. And that's kind of you're an entrepreneur when you're always like, it's like, I need to get myself around people that I can emulate, not take from, not, hey, give me money, sponsor me, you know, teach me, whatever the case is. But I'm going to try to emulate. I'm going to try to learn everything I can. I'm going to ask some questions so that I can move down the road. And you're going to make yourself as a resource to people that later on you hope to get advice from.
Yeah. And model. Like the more we can model, the more we can learn, can't we? And that's why we pay for coaching. I'm sure that's why you talk to Alex, why I talk to my business coach. Like, I love what he embodies as a person, and I just want to be more of that.
Yeah. We think they were going to catch every. Don't get me wrong. I get a lot of information from YouTube about how to fix things around the house and that kind of stuff. And you can get some great ideas as far as marketing or selling, you know, or closing deals, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's a lot to learn from videos on YouTube, but it does not compare, as you stated earlier, it does not compare to you're standing next to somebody else. And they humbly just kind of like going, yeah, you know, we're just trying to figure out how to get past the $200 million mark. You're like, I'm like, what do you do? Yeah. You know? <It's> like,
and usually those people are, as you said, the most humble, the most like, just, I was sitting next to someone at a party, well, like a social event 2 weeks ago. And I was chatting to her and she's like, she owns she's really like middle-aged, normal looking woman. And I was like, what do you do? And she's like, oh, I own called a freelancer Viet. It's like Upwork, but for Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, cool. How's it make money? And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, we just charge $15 a month flat fee because nobody wants to pay a percentage here. And I was like, oh, cool. How many users you got? 700,000 with a team of 15.
Oh, my
God. I felt like I should start a whole new business.
As soon as you said that, you know, I mean, the entrepreneurs, it's like, ideas. Hold on.
Yeah, 100 million people, no network. Problems, you know, it's great, you know, it's like proving something to a market that's ripe for it, you know. Yeah. an entrepreneurial society of 100 million people who want to make money and charge them $15 a month, which you can afford anywhere in the world. It's great.
That is cool.
I mean, cool. Obviously all the issues and all the things that come with running a business of that scale when you start diving in with it, but what a great model.
Yeah. But that's part of the challenge is you run into those problems. And frankly, sometimes you just crash and burn. Sometimes you just have just a phenomenal failure. just like, wow. But you've got to get past those. Those are going to happen. If you're afraid that they're going to happen, you're never going to, you know, you'll never get to where you really could be.
And when you're in them, they don't feel that well. They can feel really bad temporarily, can't they? But as they say, like a problem is only a problem in the future. When you're dealing with it, it's just what you're doing, isn't it? You know, fixing this thing, like worrying about it for the future is the worst because you're like, this might happen, this might not happen. Something's going to happen and it's going to be the thing you didn't expect to happen completely. It's going to be that thing that went wrong.
I've got a friend of mine, Sean Smith, who's teaching me how to properly execute on meditation and mindfulness in order to, so that you can, you know, in those situations that you can put things in perspective. I don't currently. I lose my mind, you know. You know, if something blows up significant enough, it's nice to to look in hindsight and say it's like, well, at least I grew from that. You know, like I should have done it this other way. But it would be nice. It would be the ideal to be able to have that kind of state of mind where you're just calm and collected in a crisis and be able to just power through it and keep it in perspective. It's hard to do.
So hard. And I feel that every new crisis gets slightly better though. I mean, I'm saying that now while not in a crisis, but you know, like the first time somebody threatens to sue you or first time, you know, something goes wrong in the business and you're like, this is going to destroy my business. And then, you know, that's when it's great to have a good network of like close friends, partners, anyone you can just go and just like tell them your true feelings and like they can they can be your shrink for 20 minutes while you lose your mind. And then you've lost your mind. You go back and you get the shit, you get it fixed. Don't you?
Yeah. I've got a couple of relationships like that I meet with on a monthly basis and just like, what's going on? You know? And every single time I get off that call and I'm just energized and just ready to take on the world. Love it.
Yeah, I've had a weekly call with one of my best mates for the last 6 years. Now he is. He was just a mastermind, you know, and then since then he sold his business to Thrasio for a crap load of money and all that stuff. But you know, through the whole journey of like seeing everything that's happened, but you know, in the last 6 years. So it's interesting.
Growth.
It's just great. Growth. And it's a great experience, isn't it? Like, not the same people we were 7 years ago at all.
Thank God.
Yeah, seriously, thank God. We could talk a whole load about that. Like, personal development. I did so much Tony Robbins.
Oh, I've got a story for you.
changed my life, met my wife. So much happened in the last 7 years. I'm cognizant of your time, and I know we've probably got quite a few questions coming in. So would you like to dive into the competition? And then after the competition, we can go
and check. Yeah, let's definitely do that. Let's add some fun here.
So on the Amazon Strategist Show, we always want to give back to our viewers. So if you are watching this on a pre-record or a, not pre-record, if you're watching the recorded version, there'll be a link below. If not, you can click right somewhere live on a comment here to enter the competition, which is a chance to win what Brian's putting forward today, along with everything else that's already on our wheel. First, we're going to announce some winners. We did actually... Last time we need to get some kind of like clapping machine or something. So Brian, are you willing to be the clapping machine?
I can clap. Yes.
So winners. So we have winning the Anna, the last time somebody won the consultation with Anatoly, who runs $10 million Journey podcast, who is an amazing automations operations guy. Free. And so he has a free 15-minute call where he'll basically take you through how to automate some parts of your business. And that is Sabrina Ramjit. So congratulations, Sabrina. Sabrina, you've been with us for over 2 years as a client at Seller Candy. So thank you so much for being with us. I remember when you signed up over 2 years ago. So thank you. And she's also watching the podcast.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Aaron Moore. So Zonguru. So John, he's going to kill me for forgetting his surname. John from Zonguru. Aaron Moore has won the free business health check from him. So we will connect you for that and we will reach out to you. So thank you and congratulations, Aaron.
Good job, Aaron.
And then a few weeks ago, we had Ping Pong Payments, which is definitely a tongue twister, on. And we have a secret under the market rate by consultation only, which cannot be published, with Matt from Ping Pong Payments. And that's for Cody McKee. So congratulations, Cody.
Cody, well done.
And we still have tens of thousands of dollars of prizes on our wheel. So very excited to see what we're going to give away today. All right. So Brian has put forward onto the wheel 2 45-minute consultation sessions on Amazon advertising and differentiation. I guess is that with your team, Brian, or is that?
That's with me.
With you.
Directly with me.
All right.
You can always go out to our site and get a consultation kind of analysis of your brand on Amazon. I mean, we do offer that, but this is actually a one-on-one. Yeah.
Awesome.
Fire away. Yeah.
all right. Legitimately worth thousands of dollars. I mean, as you said, the $1,000 an hour task is your time. So
that is true.
Thank you,
Brian.
Yeah. Thank you for putting your time forward.
I like to think so. Yeah. One golden nugget.
True. So yeah, none of our team can enter. So if anyone's at the Seller Candy team, don't try and win all of Brian's time. And an audit of your Amazon sales and marketing efforts, which is also super cool. And like I said, Canopy is one of our amazing clients, and we know Canopy delivers an amazing quality service to their clients.
Yeah.
Also still on the wheel, we have from AMPD, AMPT, campaign reviews and they will help you set up your Google ads driving to Amazon through their attribution software. Super cool. We
actually use AMPT also. So yeah, they're a good company.
Nice. Yeah, and Tyler has been everywhere. Yeah. Tyler is plastered all over the internet right now. We had him on a few weeks ago. We have a call with John Elder from Black Label Advisor, who was also on a few weeks ago. He's killing it on Twitter as well. So I really want to emulate his Twitter success. We have 3 months of My Horizons. We have different credits from Nathan Hirsch of Econ Balance, who is also all over the internet right now. Mm-hmm. I love his social media marketing is amazing. And he's great on that. Ping Pong, we have a 30-minute consultation with Matt. We have a couple more calls with Anatoly left. And we have a no-obligation M&A audit with Fortunet. So many prizes to win. And let's bring up the wheel producer, Vivian.
That's pretty cool, man.
Sorry, Brian, we cut you off there.
No, I was just saying you got a lot of chances to win. That's cool.
A lot of chance to win. And it kept growing. So we're going to actually spin it a few times because we realized we were taking on three prizes, not spinning it three times. So now we're going to at least spin it at least three times. And for you, Brian, as many times as you want. You get whatever you want. All right. So you're in control, Brian. What you have to say is spin that wheel and then the wheel will spin.
Spin that wheel.
That's great. Love it. Awesome. So congratulations. That is 3 free months of My Horizons, which is Envision Horizons software. We will hook you up with, is it Laura? I really hope that I'm not butchering names here. So we will hook you up. Laura Mayer. I haven't got it right. Thank you, Vivian. On the keyboard, faster than ever. All right, Brian, number two.
All right, spin that wheel. Ooh, that one had power brakes.
We have a 20-minute call with Daniel Fernandez of AMZ Clever.
Just spoke with Daniel earlier today, so yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Daniel's awesome too. We chat every couple of weeks as well. So congratulations. We will introduce you to Daniel. And one more time, Brian, or two more times?
Yes. Let's go and spin that wheel a third time.
Fortunet. So no obligation M&A audit. So if you are a scaling business and you're looking to potentially exit, do let us know because we can. You might have a bigger chance of winning this one. So thank you. And do you want to do one more, Brian, just for you? First ever four spinner?
Yeah, I mean, sure, why not?
Many times
let's do, okay, so spin that wheel. Stop specifically on mine now.
That's all right. We'll carry on advertising.
Not quite.
No. John won. Sorry, Brian. There you go. Free 1 hour call. Probably not $1 hour call. But a free 1 hour call with John Elder. So we will intro you to that, John. And Brian, you are going to stay on here. So we will keep pumping you until you remove from the wheel, which will probably be several weeks away.
Yeah, name repetition. There you go.
Yeah, so now this is when we need the I keep thinking of the Countdown theme tune in the UK. Have you ever seen that show? It's got amazing music.
Jeopardy theme.
Yeah, it's like a clock that counts down for 30 seconds and then it has a
I gotcha.
Anyway, if you were British, it's
I would know that if I were British, yeah.
Sorry, yeah, it's a thing from the UK.
It turns out I'm not.
You're American as they come, living in Texas. Oh,
yes, exactly.
Eat steak. I love steak.
Texas American, yes. Plenty of stereotypes.
Oh, I love Texas. Great. People are friendly. True,
but I mean, it's...
Oh, Jerry. Jerry McNamara. My coach, Jerry. So Jerry's an awesome dude. You should also connect with Jerry and get on his show.
He's yeah, Jerry awesome was telling me... I guess when I was talking about the... I learned, the home improvement stuff from YouTube.
Yeah.
I learned how to not electrocute myself. So that's a good start.
Very much so. Yeah. I mean, you should learn that. The Vietnamese should learn that. You should see some of the electrics here. It's scary.
A little sketchy.
Sketchy and also like mindlessly installed. You're like, they want a cable over there. Let's just run it through the center of the wall. It's like when you're in business and you tell someone, oh, this needs to happen. And then they just.
The literal translation.
As Jerry would say, process, not think. That's Jerry's Jerry's slogan, not mine. Were you processing or were you thinking? They were processing, so they put it where it was supposed to be. They didn't think, it would look nicer, wouldn't it, in a villa that there's not a cable running through the center of the wall through the entire room. Now we're going to have to remove it. And you've got to deal with me, who doesn't speak enough Vietnamese, trying to communicate it in an inspiring way.
Right.
Why did you put this in the middle of the wall?
Like, what were you thinking? I don't get thinking? Paid enough.
Now my wife has to translate.
Right.
She's not paid enough to translate for me. Thank you, Rachel. I really value as a client. All right, we have the rapid fire questions, Brian. Do you think you're ready for rapid fire questions. Yes. So this is where we get all the cool outtakes as well. So there's 9 questions and 1 word or 2 word answers, just as quickly as possible.
Okay, fire. I got it.
So,
fish.
Question.
No, I'm kidding.
That's not a bad answer to this question. What's your favorite Amazon niche?
Sporting goods.
Oh, close enough to fish. If you could choose no pictures or no reviews, what would you pick?
Ooh, no reviews.
Name a country that starts the letter M.
Moldova.
Which Amazon marketplace is the next big opportunity?
India.
Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Yes.
Name
Most people disagree with me on that, but I'm all right with
it. I don't think so. No, I mean, I think we've got more yeses than noes. We'll actually do a supercut, Viv, idea, supercut of pineapple on pizza. Yes or no? Name something appealing about working from home.
The refrigerator is 10 feet away.
Yeah. And no lines for the bathroom. Exactly. Google Ads or Facebook Ads?
Ooh, Google Ads.
Name something you'd hate to find swimming around in your bathtub.
Other than a turd, I would probably say a snake.
A swimming turd. Amazon or Walmart?
Amazon.
Totally agreed on that one.
Yeah.
So we come to the end of the main content part of our show, and now is the time for some Q&A. I mean, just say thank you so far, Brian, for playing along with the game, for being an awesome dude and coming on our
this
podcast.
This is fun. I like this show. This is fun.
I'll tell all your friends.
Well, we certainly will.
we've got some of them on already. So, all right. Any questions? I know Jerry always loves a good question, don't you, Jerry? My conversions are really high, 38%, but I don't get many clicks. Where do I start?
Let's see here. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, with a 38% conversion rate, the first step that you probably should do is just sell me your product.
I've seen 45. Yeah. Some,
yeah, you get above 30%, then let's talk. No, it's you know, you've got to have there's 3 things that you've got to have, of course, and you've got to have the visibility. You've got to have the engagement and you've got to have the conversion. So the visibility is going to be a combination of do shoppers actually see your product if they're searching? And sometimes it doesn't matter necessarily. I mean, yes, of course, you want to have your product listing. I'm going to say your product listing is the core of your problem. Your product listing probably isn't showing up for enough indexed keywords on Amazon or in any search engine for that matter. So it may not come up as often as you want. So you're not getting the traffic, the sessions to your listing. Mm-hmm. 2 is you may not be standing out from your competition. In other words, your main image, your title don't pop. They don't stand out. They don't differentiate your product from your competitors. And so think about somebody who is on a mobile phone and they're just scrolling through, they're just thumb scrolling through Amazon listings in the search results. It's really easy for them to just slide right past your listing because they're kind of mindlessly going through the list of products and images until something catches their attention. You've got to be the one that catches their attention, that gets them to pause for a split second to consider your title, to even look at the rest of your images. And usually that means doing the exact opposite of what your competition is doing when it comes to your main image and the first 75 characters of your title. Outside of, since I'm known for advertising, certainly, yes, you can do advertising. But if you don't have that prerequisite of your main image and your title popping, standing out from your competition, relative to your competition, even advertising is not going to get their attention either. It's simply just going to get impressions. You can also go off of Amazon. You can drive your own traffic. You can have conversations on social media with your target audience and discuss what their pains are and start pulling some traffic from Google Ads, Facebook Ads, if you have to deal with them, certainly from social media conversations in order to, and of course, TikTok videos in order to bring them back to your product listing. So don't rely on just thinking that the biggest mistake that most people do is thinking that advertising is that first and only lever they have to pull. Frankly, to me, it's probably the second or third lever.
Yeah, agreed. And big things coming from the advertising man himself. I'll stop playing with that. From Rachel, what are the pros and cons of hiring a PPC agency over a PPC VA?
That mostly has to do with kind of the social proof and the, I would say the, really it comes down to what's the experience, what are the tactics that either one is using. You potentially could find a VA who's a diamond in the rough. The problem is that there are, unfortunately, in the Amazon community, there are tens of thousands of virtual assistants who have come out of organizations that teach the basics, and they're in the teaching business. They're not in the actual, like, hey, this actually works kind of business. And so they teach, there's a lot of virtual assistants out on the market who claim to be experts on Amazon, and they're not. The problem is that if you get thousands and thousands of people who have 2 months of experience and have very little knowledge that claim to be an expert, then essentially they're just lying to everybody they're trying to get a job from because they're desperate to get a job. That's unfortunate. An agency has the ability of saying, like, you know what? We have overhead. We are established. We've got multiple people. We've got checks and balances. We should have a process in place. We should have some kind of track record, performance record, case studies. We should be able to have references. That, in other words, there's a lot more checks and balances for you as a brand owner to say, to qualify an agency and say, yes, you are in fact qualified to run my business. Although you're likely going to be expensive, therefore, I probably have to be at a certain level of sales before I can afford your services. Yeah, that's the reality of it. You know, certainly with Canopy, we have our minimums, but we also have a performance track record that is industry leading, you know, so it's, it, you know, it, it kind of comes with that. You could find a virtual assistant, but you've got to do an extraordinary amount of work of vetting them and testing them, having them maybe as an intern or testing them out with some kind of oversight. Don't simply just hand it off to somebody and just hope that they know what they're doing. That's a guaranteed recipe for disaster. And unfortunately, we see that all the time because we have brands that come to us who say, like, can you fix this? And usually we can, not every time. So I would say consider both, depending on where you're at in business. But if it's, if you're relying on one person and what they're claiming to have experience, test it, qualify it, do your due diligence to make sure that they actually can do what they say they can do.
Great advice. Thank you for the question, Rachel. From Twitter, how do I know if my bids are too high? I'm spending a bunch, very technical term, on PPC.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not uncommon, especially this year, for a lot of your competitors are raising up. They're spending more on ad spend and they're raising their bids because that's the only lever that they know of, is to, like, I just need to, my sales went down. I don't know why, because I'm not looking. I don't know where to look. And so the only thing I know how to do is just spend more on advertising. And then when they all do that, it's going to push your cost per click up, your ad spend up. You've got to do a couple of things on this. One is you've got to make sure that your own advertising is focused in a way where the recommendation I always have when it comes to advertising, when focusing your advertising, is focus your advertising on the products, the ad types, and the ad targets that have above average conversion rate. According, let's say you've got a few products. Look at your product that has the highest historical conversion rate. That's where I'm going to put most of my ad spend behind. If the sponsored product keyword ad type is the most profitable. I'm going to spend most of my ad budget on the sponsor product keyword ad type. If there are two or three keywords that have the highest conversion rate compared to all the other keywords, I'm going to spend most of my ad spend on those that have the highest conversion rate. That's naturally going to make it so that your ad spend has an ROI, actually has a positive return on your ad spend. You don't need to be advertising in, there's over 30 different ad placements on Amazon, first of all, across three different ad types. And you don't need to be everywhere. You need to be where it makes sense for your particular product and your particular audience compared to what your competition is doing. Most of your competition by default has access to sponsored product ads, and therefore that's probably what's going to be the most expensive. Consider focusing your sponsored product keyword ads, as an example, to just 5 to 10 keywords that you have got to rank for, that you know that this is the most relevant, most likely to convert keyword that I wish I was ranking for. That's what I'm spending my dollars on. And then I'm using the other ad types to supplement my advertising. A lot of people seem to think that getting a profitable ACOS, you know, advertising cost of sale, is hard to do. It's not. You simply just lower your bids. It's not that hard. People overcomplicate it, saying it's like, oh, it's so hard to get you know, a profitable ACOS. Well, that's because you're trying. Your mind is saying like, I want the sales more than I want the profitability. Stop doing that. Focus on what your individual objectives are. If I'm trying to rank for a keyword and trying to improve the organic keyword ranking for my product for a certain keyword, I'm gonna spend extra. I'm gonna lose money on that one, but I'm going to make it up by having bids set for my other campaigns that are below my break even, so that I'm profitable on a majority of my other ad types, and then losing money only on a very narrow set of ad targets.
Yeah. Thank you for that answer. Super detailed and very insightful. The thing when people say I can't be profitable, and it's all about volume, isn't it? Like, I can't be profitable at the volume you want to move through that keyword.
Yeah. It's an ego number. You know, it's like, well, I've got to keep this sales level because I've achieved it. Yeah, I can understand. It's a good pat on the back to say I have this level of success. But if you have to lay off people who support families and they can't eat or send their kids to school because your ego says I've got to have sales instead of profitability, that's on you.
Yeah, hard lesson. Revenue is vanity, profit is sanity.
Right.
Well, cash is reality.
Yeah, I know. It's. Yeah, the bank doesn't cash ego checks.
Bank just lends money at.
Well, yeah, bad. Yeah, yeah. Unless you want to go to college, then yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we can talk another hour about what's going on in the US about that. All right, let's see. Any more questions? Any more questions? We're coming up towards the hour. I know anyone who's been watching for the entire time, thank you so much for watching. Interesting. My ads keep getting rejected, but I can never figure out why. So is that on the Amazon platform or outside?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly can. If it's on Amazon, it's usually just a few handful of reasons. Most of the time, ads are going to be rejected because of content in the product listing. You've got some kind of content, some words that are in your product listing that violate the terms of service, that are on the blacklist, if you will, on Amazon. Sometimes there are other situations where, like, sponsored brand ads specifically have a different kind of scrutiny. Sponsored brand ads will get rejected because they make a mention that it can be anything that is future holiday related. In other words, if I were to try advertising for Halloween right now, it would get rejected because it's not within 4 weeks of Halloween. There's time-based kind of rejections like that. There are political based rejections. If I'm saying, you know, I might be able to do, you know, a Jewish item for, you know, for Hanukkah, for instance, and I can run that ad. But if I do the same thing with a Christian thing, oh, you can't do that. That's religious. It's not fair. I'm saying it's just, but it definitely can get rejected. Sometimes it is based off of, usually I would say the number one most likely offender of this, of not being able to run ads or having ads rejected, is because of your product listing has something, some word in it that's violating. You're making a medical claim. You're using a term like boost or cure, or, you know, I mean, there's no published long list. It's just more of an experience, you know, kind of list, you know, that I've got in my head, but it'd be pretty easy. In fact, if you, whoever's asking that, if you want to reach out to me and say, hey, here's the ASIN, you know, and the marketplace, can you take a look at it and see, am I, you know, do I have something in my content that is an obvious, like, there's no way you're going to get your ad approved with that word in there. Most likely every time somebody, I let somebody do that, I come back and I said, okay, there's six words in here that potentially remove those six and see if you can get an ad to run, and then start adding them back in one at a time to find out which one actually is. But most of the time, it's because of content violation is preventing you from running an ad. And of course, Amazon's not going to tell you what that is.
Of course, Amazon never tell you anything. No. Just stop contacting us. We're never going to reply again. You are shut down. Yeah. Amazon's standard response. I guess we can go on that later. How can they reach out to you? What's the best way to reach out to you, Brian?
You can reach out to me, you know, obviously. So my email is just Brian, Brian, at canopymanagement.com. I'm also on YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn, and you'll see me sprinkled around on the internet. There you go. Yeah. Or you could just look at the link that John's got up right now.
hands free.
I was kind of worried. Is that my current one? Because Facebook kicked me off.
What have you been putting out there, Brian?
Hold on. Let me make sure.
So you had to start a brand new Facebook account.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Wow. So I think that actually is not. I think that's one of the old ones. Ah. So let me do this. Thinking
about a live show, we can correct as we go.
I know, right?
You do that in everything in business.
Edit this profile and everything, but so the one I have here, I guess I can't really add a comment here, can I?
That's all right. What is it? Facebook.com/
Well, I don't have a nice name to it. It's one of those ID number, you know.
Oh, that's cool. Well, numbers. Just ping it across, and Viv will put it below all of the pre-recorders of the show.
Okay. I'll try to get it customized.
Vanity URL.
Yeah. The same thing, I guess, works on, Instagram, the Brian R. Johnson PPC on Instagram would also reach me. So similar to what you already had up there, just Instagram.com. There you go. Nice. That works.
Wow. It's prepped everything.
See? So, on the fly.
And canopymanagement.com. And your new, I've seen your website's been updated sometime in the last year, and I really like the case studies and everything's great.
Yeah, we try to do it every few months. Actually, we've got some great blog content out there. We've got an incredible writer that we stole from Helium 10, and he produces some great content in conjunction with our ad teams and our creative teams and everything. So, I'm glad to have him on board for sure.
Love it. Any more questions before we have to let Brian go? Because it must be getting towards evening time in Texas. What, 6 p.m.?
Something like that. Yeah, we're good.
All right, one more question. Well, one more question. How many campaigns should I run on each product?
How long is a piece of string? It's going to vary, certainly. Certainly, when you first launch a product, I typically do maybe two. I'll do typically like a keyword targeted campaign with a fairly limited set 10 to 20 keywords maybe, and then maybe some product targeting campaigns. And then later on, I'll add in, you know, automatic campaigns with low bid. I'll definitely expand out into product targeting campaigns, targeting weaker competitors or competitors where I think I've got a better product. Certainly where I've done a good job. The prerequisite to running product targeting ads is to have a air quote decent conversion rate, what you consider to be, a good rate. Certainly the 38% that I saw there earlier was definitely a good one. Probably anything above 15% conversion rate is probably a good to start running your product targeting ads. And certainly a prerequisite would be, is your main image and your title compelling? In other words, is there some kind of a hook, two or three words in the first 75 characters where somebody just says, I want that? Could be a benefit, could be a feature, just something where they're going to look at that and go like, ooh, I want that. That stands out from your competition, not just a search term, not just a brand name, not some specification or industry acronym or something like that. Something where it's two or three words, first 75 characters so that it can be seen on mobile or desktop or whatever, where somebody just says like, ooh, that's different. I want that. Free shipping is not an example of that.
Guaranteed. 100% manufacturer guaranteed.
Premium.
premium. Best premium, yeah, exactly. Manufacturer guaranteed.
Yeah. For men, for women. Yeah. If you have any of those words that we just mentioned in your title, you're doing it wrong.
Awesome. Well, Brian, I mean, thank you so much. I know your time is very valuable. Thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for giving away those amazing consultation sessions, which we will introduce you to in the coming weeks as people win them.
And John, it's been my pleasure. I would certainly come back if you asked. This has been fun for me.
No, we will ask 100%.
Cool.
So if you are interested in any of Canopy services, do go to canopymanagement.com, reach out to them on the website, reach out to Iro and Patrick, whoever's on the team, whoever actually gets the inbound. One thing, the best thing that anyone said to me at Prosper was what Patrick said to me. And he told me that the best decision he made in 2021 was hiring Seller Candy. And he told Brian Burt that.
Nice.
And I was like, I wish I'd recorded it. Otherwise, I'd play it right now.
That's awesome. He actually just got promoted too, so...
Oh, he told me we were on a call last week. Yeah. And, him and Iram, it was great.
Yeah, was, Patrick made it up to our chief brand officer. So, yeah.
Awesome. He's an awesome dude, well. Isn't he? Ops guy. Awesome ops guy. He's an awesome ops guy.
Yeah, for sure.
And what I will never be in terms of operations.
know your place.
no, my place, not in operations. Warren, if you're watching, Warren's our ops guy. He's there an awesome ops guy. So, thank you so much. If you are interested in any, not you, Brian, but if anyone who's watching is interested in getting anything fixed on their Amazon Seller Central account, any issues with seller support, plans of action, suspensions, just dealing with all of the seller support headaches you have every single day, please do reach out to sellercandy.com, chat to Ben. There's our URL. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you, Brian. And as always, we hope tonight's episode was beneficial to everyone that's watching now or on a repeat. If you enjoy it, please click any like, subscribe button anywhere around this screen. And see you at the next show. Until then, awesome. I'm your host, John Cavendish, and this is Mr. Brian R. Johnson.
Thanks,
Thank you very much.